Well, it's not going to be easy, but we're going to have a heart-to-heart conversation about you and your money and even your banker and your relationship. So the question is your money being used by your banker against you? Is it being weaponized? That's the question today.
A clear path forward requires looking back and learning. Good public policy requires human connection. It's a consideration of the facts, applying common sense, and innovation. It's urban, it's rural, it's real life. We all have something to contribute. We all have a responsibility to get informed, because there's a little piece of Canada in all of us, isn't there? Let's learn on this path together. This is Leaders on the Frontier.
All right, so today we're going to talk about your money, your bank, and frankly, whether or not that money is being used against you for political purposes. And on top of that, at your expense. I mean, it's really quite outrageous. So we're going to dive into that. And we're going to talk about words like ESG or net zero or divestment. And so with me here today to help peel the perennial onion to explain that is going to be a special guest. Her name is Gina Papano. And Gina is the Executive Director of InvestNow. So welcome, Gina.
Thank you, David. It's nice to be here.
Well, Gina, it's so great that you could come on. I'm excited to have you on because not only are you the executive director of InvestNow, but you also have an interesting background as working as a leader at the Toronto Stock Exchange and also the TSX Venture Exchange. What did you do in your previous job at the TSX?
Well, I was head of the market intelligence department for Toronto Stock Exchange and TSX Venture Exchange. And I worked there for 15 years. And part of our mandate was to support the business development department, who would go around the world telling companies the advantages of listing on our exchanges. And one of the main advantages, especially for resources sectors, was access to capital. And through that, through my job, I learned the importance of the natural resources sectors. Having been, you know, born and bred in Toronto, you don't really notice or know that much about the resources sectors. And I learned a lot and I realized, whoa, these are important economic drivers for Canada, for jobs, for, you know, everyday Canadians. And so when I left the TSX, I became interested in what was happening with the demonization of the natural resources sectors.
Okay.
And I wanted to do something about it.
All right. So you're with an organization called InvestNow. And
yes.
What's the mission of InvestNow?
Well, InvestNow was started 3 years ago. We're a not-for-profit, and our mission is to challenge the divestment movement, which has taken root in Canada over the last several years. And there wasn't a voice challenging the divestment movement, and now there is one, and that's
all
our
right.
voice. And we're trying to get out there to get our messaging out there that divestment is wrong.
Yeah, indeed. So we're going to dive into this a little bit. It's really quite an incredible story, and I think that people will be fascinated by it. So we're going to look at some terms here with your help and go quickly through this.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we mean by the divestment movement? What is that language?
So the divestment movement means you are not investing in a certain sector. You're hoping to starve that sector of capital. And the divestment movement started about 10 years ago. It's it was created and executed by a group out of the U.S. called 350.org. I'm sure we've all heard about them. And to help climate change or to reduce emissions, they started this movement hoping to, in their own words, their mission is to dismantle the oil and gas, the fossil fuels industry.
Right.
That is in their words. It's in their press releases. That is their mission.
Okay, so they want to get rid of oil and gas.
Mm-hmm.
But on top of that, the divestment movement is really morphed into a lot of related financial movements too. Like I think of the word ESG, right? Environmental, social governance. They use all these acronyms, all these words. They all sound good. But what is ESG in a nutshell?
Well, ESG, as you said, is environmental social governance. And the issue with ESG is that the E has taken over. And so in the name of ESG, they are not investing in oil and gas companies.
Because the world's coming to an end because of climate change. Is that right?
Right.
Okay.
And the facts are that that does nothing to help climate change. It does nothing to help emissions reduction. So, you know, everyone is saying, oh, ESG investing is good. And their slogan is doing well by doing good. So you're doing well in your investments. Yeah. But that is, in fact, is not the case, because what you're doing is you're following ideologies instead of worrying about the shareholders and the company's returns.
Okay. So ESG is another big word that they use. And it's confusing because these radical groups are masters at using language. So it sounds good, but in fact, it's usually the opposite. So you have to be very, very skeptical with your eyes open, right, Gina?
That's right. Yes. Part of the problem is there's no analysis done on the repercussions of following an ESG investment protocol, but also like net zero. They all fall under the divestment umbrella, I would say.
Okay.
So all of
all
these
right.
new terms, and now it's going, ESG is kind of morphing into sustainability. And so they're all just different terms, but they all mean the same thing. And what it means is no more investing in oil and gas.
Yeah.
Starting with oil and gas.
But the headline is that they're trying to compel everybody. They're trying to get, they're trying to use the power of the government. They're trying to use, they're trying to co-opt the big companies, your bank, everybody to get on their bandwagon of political activism to use for their cause. And they're basically taking your money and weaponizing it to their political cause. Is that right?
That's right. Yes. And we're trying to get the message out there that that is obviously totally wrong and it should stop.
Okay.
And we should be investing in our oil and gas sector.
Right on. So we're going to kind of walk through this more and more. So help me understand, for people that aren't aware of this, when you go into a shareholder meeting, and I think you and I have participated in a number of them over the years, what's it like? What's a shareholders meeting? Like, really simple terms.
Well, a shareholders meeting happens once a year, the annual general meeting it's called, and it's a chance for the company, the corporation, to have a forum where their shareholders can hear how they've done, what their strategy is going forward. You have an ability to present a shareholder proposal at the annual general meeting. And so if you meet all the criteria, you can present something. It's an opportunity for shareholders to ask questions. So the floor is open for questions if you are a shareholder. And so it's the one time of the year where you can address the board of directors, executive management teams of these companies who are often, you know, at a higher level where you don't have the opportunity to address them or ask them questions. Mm-hmm. And this is the opportunity. If you're a shareholder, you have this opportunity at the AGM.
Okay. So those shareholder meetings are for shareholders, the owners of the company.
Yep.
And you can show up, and a lot of them are public. And you can ask questions and hold people to account, the management, because as a shareholder, you want a fair return. You want to understand what's going on and what the issues are facing. But something has been going on. So you have these activists who've been buying a few shares, and they've been getting to these meetings. And what have they been doing at these shareholder meetings?
Well, for the past several years, they have been going unchallenged. Through their shareholder proposals, they're basically asking the banks to stop investing in oil and gas companies. That's their main mission. Also to do, and it's also spreading out to other dimensions, but the main ones have always been about oil and gas. The banks, the companies, they should be not investing in oil and gas. They should be committing to net zero if in the case of an oil and gas company. So any whatever the ideology is, they're asking the banks to follow that. And the political,
political activists, they bought a few shares, they're in there like stink, and they're basically hijacking the meeting, saying, we want you to do this, we forbid you from doing that, and they're exerting their power. And meanwhile, there's a lot of shareholders that are they're silent. Most shareholders don't even show up at a meeting. Like, I own shares and all kinds of things, but I often don't show up at a meeting because I'm trusting that the management and the main shareholders are doing their job and they're trying to maximize their profit and respect my interests. Is that, I think that's a dynamic that happens, is it not?
Yes, that is a dynamic. Many people don't attend the shareholder meetings, and they vote their shares according to what the management or the board tells you to vote. So a proposal goes in, you engage with the company, then it goes to, if you decide that it's going to be presented at the AGM, and then the corporation that you're presenting the shareholder proposal to, they'll say, well, we don't agree with this. We recommend you vote against this proposal.
Okay.
So, Gina, people just say, okay, I'm going to give my proxy over to the banks. So yeah. I'm giving my voting ability to the banks or the board of directors, and I will vote the way they tell me to vote. Because it's okay. Actually an effort to go against that. It's an effort for an individual investor to vote okay. at the AGMs. It's not right. easy.
Wow. So they're playing chess and the rest of us are playing checkers, because what they're doing is they're arranging all these votes and they're doing it kind of in these fancy ballrooms or wherever they meet, where most people don't even know that they're meeting. So this is kind of under the cover of darkness. They always like to do their stuff under the cover of darkness. That's what I notice is the common pattern, right? So you used a term before that a lot of people wouldn't understand or be familiar with. It's called net zero. What do you mean by net zero?
Well, net zero is you are taking out whatever you're putting into the atmosphere. So, you know, if you're putting out so much emissions, then you have to take that out as well. But in my mind, net zero is just another word for divestment, because what it's saying is, you know, in the next 25 years, we don't want oil and gas companies to take anything out of the ground. We don't want Canadian oil and gas companies to take anything out of the ground, because that's the end game for net zero.
Right.
The dismantling of the oil and gas sector.
Exactly. So net zero is a whole ambitious program. Mm-hmm. It relates to all kinds of plans that the usual suspects are working at implementing, not just at the national level by the federal government. They have a whole net zero objective by 2030. But if you think of the Davos crowd, the good and the great who fly in there on their private jets, they all believe that carbon dioxide is a pollutant. And like Al Gore says, the oceans are boiling and it's all going to come to end with Greta Thunberg. So when you look at this, this is all in keeping with the federal legislation that was just passed before Christmas called the so-called Just Transition.
Right.
And how do you see that Just Transition? Is that kind of is that going to be good for Canadians, or how is that going to impact us? Gina.
No, I don't see it as being good at all. I see that I believe that it's actually going to be a deindustrialization of Canada.
And a deindustrialization of Canada.
Well, because the manufacturing sector and the oil and gas sector are so intertwined. You need affordable, reliable energy to run companies. And if we can look to Europe as the so-called canary in the coal mine. Like, look at what's happening. So many plants have shut down. So much manufacturing has gone out of Europe. Do we want that to happen to Canada? Like, I don't think people are thinking about the repercussions. Like, what will people be doing if there are no factories, if there are no, if we're not exporting oil and gas? It's one of our major exports.
Yeah.
Well, what can't will we, all just... we as Canada do to export? And plus, everything relies on oil and gas. Like, all the sectors on the exchange. You can't have mining without oil and gas. You can't have industry without oil and gas. So the just transition, I would ask the question, transition to what? What will we be doing in 25 years if we don't have the oil and gas sector? And this is coming from, like, my parents were immigrants. They worked in factories. All of my aunts and uncles worked in factories. Those factories are shut down now. So what will be coming to replace these jobs? That's the question to ask. And I don't really think, I think people are going blindly into net zero, just transition. They're not really thinking it through.
Exactly. No, I think you're right on, Gina. When you talk about net zero and just transition, it all sounds like utopia words to me. It all sounds very ideal. But if you peel away the reality, you realize that all these policies are ideological statements. They're not really grounded in any reality. If you look at oil and gas, as you said, like, we've had in Canada very We have what's called winter, and it does get cold, and you need reliable, affordable energy. You can't have intermittent energy like from a windmill, and all of those things. Windmills, solar panels are all based on oil and gas. I mean, this is just delusional. So what we have is, and there's very real rules of physics that doesn't allow for energy to match the concentration of energy that we have through oil and gas. So it's really quite a disturbing set of, quote, policies that are really more kind of ideological delusions rather than reality. And I think this is going to really hit people hard. As you say, we deindustrialize society. You know, and I know that in Europe, we've had many cases of people dying in cold because energy has become so expensive, as it is increasingly here. And people will pass away because they're so cold, because they're making decisions between food and, you know, how hot can they afford to warm their home. It's really quite tragic, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I think we need to look to Europe, because what is happening there? And they don't, you know, Canada is blessed with these natural resources. We should be pouring money into our sector to get it out to the rest of the world.
Because exactly.
The one factor that is not thought about is the demand. You know, demand has gone up. Since the divestment movement started, demand has risen. Mm-hmm. Emissions are still rising. So there's a disconnect. You're taking money away from the sector, but these things are still happening. So there needs to be a better way. And that's through investment, innovation, you know, getting our oil and gas, Canada's oil and gas, out to the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. That can't happen if policies are just trying to keep it down, like not get it out of the ground. So
exactly.
That's disconnect.
So we're kind of headed on a slow train wreck as we look at a federal government in particular, some provinces that want to get rid of oil and gas. They are pushing an agenda that will affect every industry, whether it's mining, forestry,
agriculture,
big time, as we look at the big protests right across Europe, including in Germany now, but also, you know, the entire service sector. So there's everything at stake. So how is divestment, net zero, and ESG related? Is there a simple way to summarize that?
Well, it all comes down to, they don't want to put in capital or money into these oil and gas companies, thinking that without capital or investment, they will just go away. They will die.
Exactly. Yeah.
And really, it comes down to their stated mission, which is to dismantle the oil and gas industry.
Yeah.
They put it on there. They put it out there.
So exactly.
This is what they're trying to do.
Now, and this is in plain. This is all in plain sight.
It's called ESG. That is the goal.
Exactly. So it's all in plain sight now. And who is driving ESG and also another kind of? They're all joined at the hip. The same ideology of socialism and radical environmentalism and all kinds of social movements like diversity, equity, inclusion. That's another acronym that we hear all the time. Some people reverse it, like Jordan Peterson. They refer to it as diversity, inclusion, and equity for DIE, because it has a very, you know, these are very significant words, and they all sound so good, but they're actually, again, just the opposite. So who's really pushing this now, in your opinion, beyond the activist groups? Like, is there a whole consulting industry behind this as well now?
Yes, and I think, you know, all of the, even the heads of the corporations, there are very few that are speaking out against this movement, movements. So they've become almost an arm of the government, where if the government is saying, well, we need to do all of this, and then they're just following through, all in the name of policy. Like, net zero is not legally binding, but the companies are all on board saying that they're going to be net zero by 2050. And my contention, or Invest Now's contention, is like, think about the end game. Like, what are the repercussions of this policy path that you're following? We don't think that's there. We don't think that we think that they're going blindly into
exactly
net zero. Everyone feels like they have to commit to it. And so they're just saying it. And what does that mean? What does it mean?
So I want to break that down a little bit, but at Frontier, we've done a lot of research. In fact, you can go on the website and see all kinds of really great backgrounders on ESG and its absurdity. But part of this is that they've played the long game. This has been a marathon where they've embedded now people who've been chosen through this criteria of ESG, environmental social governance. They have a whole checklist, right? They have a whole kind of, they use it as a toolkit to carefully decide which companies are green or good and those are bad. I mean, it's not just oil and gas. They're trying to push in every area. Like, so it's about your race, your gender, your sexual orientation, God only knows what else. And they're hiring all these people. They're even getting their people appointed to the boards.
Yes.
They're getting their senior officers in there. And they've got a whole bureaucracy. It's a bit like the universities. Like the universities in Canada have been largely taken over by these diversity, equity, inclusion bureaucrats who suck up enormous amount of money and resources. But they're all in favor of this because they were all hired through it. Is that what you're observing as well, Gina?
Well, yes. I mean, if you're hired as chief sustainability officer, you'll want to keep your job because it's very high paying. And if you're running it for the bank, you know, that's a big deal job. Right. So what the issue is, it's kind of like this treadmill that people are on. And really, in the end, banking should be about banking, not about climate, not about income distribution, not about whatever,
right
as
on.
You said, you know, whatever's coming down the pipes. Mm-hmm. And that is not happening right now. So, you know, as they're trying to debank the oil and gas sector, and that's not going to work well. That's not going to end well for everyday Canadians and for our economy. It just won't, and for emissions reductions, frankly, it just won't end well if they go along this path, continue along this path.
Couldn't agree more. So this movement, the so-called movement that is using your money for their political causes now, how have they co-opted the banks, the institutions, and even your pension fund?
Well, so as you mentioned before, they started in, like, the divestment movement started at the universities. So they were staging protests and they were addressing the Board of Governors. Who's, you know, the Board of Governors made up of people that have graduated from the university and now they're coming back in as sitting on their board. And they started with the university saying our endowment fund cannot invest in oil and gas. So they're placing these artificial constraints on an investment pool. And that never ends well because this endowment fund, the investors are saying, well, we're not going to look at any oil and gas companies. We don't care if they're inventing the best way to get it out of the ground, the cleanest way, we are not going to look at them.
Yeah.
So you're just carving out a whole sector and saying we're not investing. Many universities have committed to that. This is billions of dollars.
So what's an example of universities in Canada that are getting on board this crazy train?
Oh, the University of Guelph, U of T, UBC, Waterloo.
Wow.
McGill, like they're all McMaster. So they've all, this is 10 years in the making. So we were watching it at Invest Now. That's where we really started. We said, well, no, we have to get to these boards of governors.
Mm-hmm.
But we're the lone voice. Like we're speaking out against this and we're trying to get to corporate Canada, to these boards of governors to say, think about what you are voting for when you say you're voting for divestment.
No,
you're voting against Canada. You're voting against Canadians.
Exactly. It's really outrageous because Canada is known worldwide for having an outstanding oil and gas sector. It has been systematically vilified and campaigned against, ironically, by things like the Tides Foundation, like these foreign foundations trying to vilify it. And you have, a resource sector there that serves not only our country, but the world in so many respects. And we have a diversified energy portfolio in Canada from hydro, nuclear, and great oil and gas. So what I find just so paradoxical is that so many of these companies then are shipping their manufacturing over to places such as, China, and then we're shutting down our manufacturing here, and then we ship it all back in the form of goods from China, who is who are building, the last time I counted, 3 to 5 coal-fired plants every month. So, you know, this is insanity. And so it begs the question, is this a cynical game where some of these bankers and all the rest who should know better are in effect using the this is kind of a virtue signaling exercise where they can charge you a higher fee for, quote, ESG funds because it's supposedly better, when in fact it's not. It's kind of a sham. Is that another way to see this? Is it kind of a cynical exercise? Or are these people real believers? Or is it both?
Well, I think it might be both. But I don't think, if they were real believers, they would know that the past 10 years haven't led to anything. And that, you know, the facts are that 82% of the world's oil and gas energy needs comes from oil and gas. Mm-hmm. That hasn't changed. You know, it's gone a percentage point up or down, or you know, 80%. That's still to this day that it's 82% of our global energy needs. So,
and the demand is going up.
Canada should be in there.
Yeah.
And demand is going up.
The demand is going up. We've got presidents, prime ministers coming into Canada from Japan, Germany, and elsewhere wanting energy from Canada because they see us as a reliable, responsible energy partner. And our prime minister gets up and says, there's no business case.
Right.
How is that possible, Gina?
I have no idea how that's possible, because there is a strong business case to, well, it just comes back down to it. We don't want to promote our oil and gas sector. You know, the baseline is no more oil and gas in Canada.
So we want to forego our,
that's what they're going from. That's the baseline.
Okay. So just stepping back for a sec, when we talk about pension funds, to be clear, every analysis that I've seen shows that any pension fund that buys into ESG-managed funds has lower returns than, quote, normal pension funds. Is that correct?
That's the analysis I've seen as well. And again, if you're putting an artificial constraint on a portfolio, usually affects returns in a negative way. So it started out with the universities, then it went with the pension funds, public pension funds. And now, you know, public pension funds are saying, well, we're not divesting. We are divesting from oil and gas. We're not going to invest in oil and gas. Then it was the banks. So there's a steady progression of institutions that the divestment movement is targeting. And that's why InvestNow started to kind of be a voice in the wilderness.
Yeah, exactly. In this example, though, Gina, you could have... I could be an oil and gas worker doing my job every day in Alberta, Saskatchewan, BC, Timbuktu, across Canada. And I'm working very hard and I'm putting my money into a pension fund, including the Canadian pension plan.
Yes.
And they're systematically trying to shut down my job. That's how absurd this is. And not only that, I'm getting a lower return on my pension. This is how ridiculous this is. Is that the summary of it?
That's exactly right. And, you know, there have been the pensioners need to start speaking up about this. And we've had campaigns where we've sent out letters to university professors saying your pension fund is being weaponized.
Yeah.
Are you aware of this? A lot of people, again, it's a lot of people don't read the documents. They don't. They're just. It's over here and it's not really affecting them day to day. But if they saw the effects of it, I think they would be mad and angry and say, wait, what are we doing? Especially oil and gas workers.
Yeah.
They're putting their money in and they're saying, well, no, we don't, your sector's gone in 25 years.
No, it's ridiculous. So this is where it's kind of an ugly question, but is your banker working for you or are they working for the woke activists?
Well, right now, if they're following the policies of the government and of the banks, they're working for the woke establishment or the woke corporations, the not-for-profits that are calling on them to do this. They're not really sticking to their banking and they're not really looking after their customers.
Wow. So I don't want to unfairly generalize, but it's very important that you look at your own bank, your credit union, your financial advisor, your funds, your pension plan, and have a heart-to-heart with them and ask them, are you investing in ESG funds? That's a key thing everybody needs to do, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that people have to look at where their pension fund money is going. Will there be a pension when it's time to, you know, start having your pension paid out to you? Because a lot of pension funds right now are very severely underfunded.
What do you mean they're severely underfunded?
To meet their obligations.
Yeah.
If someone retires and, you know, at the age of 65, they're not able to meet their obligations to that pensioner.
And they're underfunded in part, Gina, for many reasons, not the least of which is because they're investing in these crazy ESG funds that are underperforming. You can't make this up. It's like out of a bad movie, isn't it?
They're just not applying the proper criteria to oil and gas companies, because if you looked at an oil and gas company on a case-by-case basis, you could say, oh yeah, look at, they're doing very well on the environmental front, social, they're providing this many jobs, they're so well governed because they're a Canadian company and we have such high standards in governance. So right there, if you're saying, then that company should be in an ESG fund, but they're not doing that. They're just saying, no, oil and gas, out. So that is the problem, that they're not taking they're not looking at these companies for what they are.
And exactly.
What they are are providing prosperity to Canada and Canadians.
Right on. So in this context, I think what is also quite disgusting is that we have this whole ESG movement is really an attack as well on small business and entrepreneurs. Because this is a big business game, right? When you have to set up a whole woke bureaucracy of DEI bureaucrats and all the rest, and they're all falling over themselves doing all the paperwork so they can get their fancy listing and rating on this ESG ranking score. It truly is a big business play. And so in my mind, that is really detestable, because a key part of driving innovation and our prosperity is the small, medium-sized business sector. So
yes,
I think that's a massive issue, is it not?
Yes. Well, that comes back to, you know, the other side always says, oh, our children, our grandchildren, we have to save the world for our children and our grandchildren. Well, I would say I want to save the world in a different way. For my children and grandchildren to have jobs, like, what will they be doing? And that is always my question. What are my kids going to do?
Yeah.
If we're going down this path?
I think you're right on, Gina. We need to speak up for the sake of the next generation. And in that context, we know that Canada has a major problem when it comes to our economy, specifically our productivity. And productivity is the cornerstone, the foundation, as you know full well, Gina, to our prosperity, our quality of life.
Yes.
And under these policies, like, we've got a full frontal attack on oil and gas, a full frontal attack on affordable energy. We've got all kinds of harebrained, quote, policies that are undermining our standard of living. And the stats prove it. As we look at quarter after quarter, the last several years, our productivity is declining. Yes. We are at the same level, and God bless them, the country of South Korea. So we are going down the ladder of prosperity. And a lot of this is because of these harebrained policies. Do you believe that?
Yes. And the oil and gas sector is one of our most productive sectors. If you look at all like productivity, I think it's our most productive sector.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to get rid of it, and nothing is coming up to replace it. So yes, we're just in a downward spiral, in my opinion.
Exactly. So when we look at the role of government, can you help me explain the role of government in pushing this whole divestment movement?
Well, the role of government is that they're putting together these policies, and not necessarily to the good of the people that elected them. They're just putting out these policies like carbon tax, emissions caps, everything to, again, you know, it's always the same. They're trying to get rid of the oil and gas sector. They don't want oil coming out of the ground, the Canadian oil and gas sector. They don't understand, I don't think, that oil and gas is going to come from somewhere. So why wouldn't we want it to come from Canada?
You know, exactly.
The cleanest oil and gas. We have such high governance standards. And now we're just saying, oh, okay, Russia, Venezuela, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Iran, UAE countries. So just we're handing it over to them.
And I think you're right.
And that is all in the name of climate change and destruction of our economy.
Yeah. And I think what I've also observed, Gina, is to top it off, you have a government that is using a full court press, every tool in the book, to shut down Canadian oil and gas, among other agenda. So you look at policies, like you can barely build a pipeline in this country.
Right.
You can barely barely get oil and gas to tidewater to be able to get it to the world, which desperately is in need of good energy. And then you have all these policies that really undermine First Nations to be able to develop and prosper from the oil and gas sector. And then you have all kinds of efforts to tax carbon dioxide, which no scientist, to my knowledge, believes seriously that carbon dioxide is a pollutant. Not too far from here, you've got all kinds of greenhouses that pump carbon dioxide to enhance plant growth. I mean, this is absurd.
That's right.
So you have a situation as well where the government is using taxpayers' money to actually fund a number of these groups that are advocating for ESG. Is that not correct?
Oh, yes. The two companies that are always, or the two not-for-profits, they're very well-funded, that go up, they present shareholder proposals, you know, As You Sow, I think is one of them, and Investors for Paris Compliance. They're always at the bank, AGMs, and they have a lot of money to write these proposals, to be at the meetings, to advocate for their cause throughout the year. They're very well funded.
Yeah. And the irony is, I see, as you see a number of levels of government, particularly the federal government, that is consistently advertising now and naming agencies, like they're naming whole ministries, the Ministry of Climate Change and putting right in there climate crisis everywhere you turn. So what self-respecting policy group would ever lead with crisis? Like everything is a crisis to somehow manipulate and create fear that we're going to have to change the way your money works in a way that is radically different, all in the name of crisis. So everything is now a crisis. Do you see that type of government-inspired propaganda as well?
Yes, I do. You see it in commercials, and you know the climate crisis always comes up in a commercial if you're looking at something on the internet, and it's all part of the lexicon. There are the crisis,
yeah,
the crisis,
right.
And same thing about children, grandchildren. What are they? We have to save the world. The world is burning, but we have to turn it around and say, well, no, we're looking at another crisis that's very different and
exactly
more important. I would say the economic and prosperity crisis.
So this divestment movement has marshaled a lot of allies. They've got a big team. They're well funded. They've got the they're pushing every button they can.
Yeah, and they have celebrities, internet influencers. Lots of people are working for them. Global alliances.
So who are the celebrities that are on board with this nonsense? As an example.
Oh well, I think Mark Ruffalo has said he was talking about RBC being a sponsor of TIFF.
Yes.
And he was saying that's ridiculous. You know, RBC should not be a sponsor of TIFF.
Right.
Wow. Now they don't want their money. They don't want, they're really dictating a lot of the bank policy. They're trying to dictate what the bank puts their money in. And, there's so many it's the attacks are coming from all fronts.
Yeah, and you've got to open your eyes to see this. So also the media, the mainstream media, we've got some 2,000 outlets across Canada that are generously funded by the federal government, and they all have to sign essentially codes of conduct on this issue now, don't they? They have to basically buy in to climate alarmism. I mean, this is absurd when in fact there's a huge debate. There's thousands of scientists that believe this is utter nonsense. So we've got a media that's been really kind of bought into this literally with the money from the federal government.
That's right. And they're not presenting the other side of the equation, you know, which is, well, the oil and gas sector provides 400,000 jobs in Canada. What will happen to those jobs? Is that ever talked about? I don't know. Or what does net zero really mean?
Exactly.
Look at, you know, what, so that those messages have to come out that this is a, you know, we're on a path that is not good for Canada, shareholders, everyday Canadians, employees. Like, it's just not a good path for our country.
Right. And when you think of the key impacts then on the consumer, on the Canadian, how would you summarize, because this is kind of stunning, the kind of overview we've had just today in our conversation about the impacts that this divestment movement is going to have on Canadians. But if someone came up to you tomorrow, how would you explain the impacts on a Canadian?
Well, we've seen the impacts because there's been the chronic underinvestment in the sector has led to supply shortages. Because as you said, we can't get our oil and gas to where it needs to be. Supply shortages, prices go up. So we're seeing those effects right now. People have to choose, you know, the grocery store bill versus our heating bill. Everything's going up, all of these policies with the taxes. So we are feeling these impacts. And if people are losing their jobs, nothing's to replace it. There's not enough tax revenue going into the government because our companies are not thriving as much as they should be with investment and being able to sell their product. Those are the impacts. You know, it's coming down from the lack of investment from ten years ago.
Surely a key set of impacts relates to future employment in a massive industry of hundreds of thousands of people, both direct and indirect jobs. So ultimately, it's millions of jobs, as you've alluded to. But I think on a very practical basis, Gina, I've seen it, you know, as I look at the so-called Just Transition Bill that was passed just before Christmas, I've seen a lot of credible estimates and research that suggests that carbon taxes will quadruple, if not much higher, when it comes to, say, gasoline alone. Now, that has a huge impact on anyone who drives, what is it called? Oh, yeah, car. So you've got a situation where your ability to commute, and I experienced this actually last year. I had my bank teller, you know, I've gotten to know over the years, and she said, David, this is my last year on the job because, you know, I just can't afford to commute anymore this half an hour. It doesn't make any sense with the increased price of gasoline, and it was really through taxes, is really killing my budget. So, you know, this hurts people to have to spend an extra $500 to $1,000 or even more every month on gas. Like, you're just basically killing the middle class. It's really outrageous. So I have a situation as well where all that energy increased costs cascades through every sector. Like, why do you think some farmers got to charge you more for chicken or beef or vegetables or anything? It's all reflected through this crazy thing. And then you have, you know, like, that's why you have this whole carve out around carbon tax, right, for Atlantic Canada that was a disaster because people, you know, the pushback was so major. So, I mean, do you think carbon tax policy is going to end politically? Is it quite vulnerable as people wake up to the pain and the impacts of increased costs?
Well, we can look to Europe, you know, with the protests, the farmers are protesting right now. And I think it's going to take people to wake up, look at their bills, see what's happening. With every, you know, plant that shuts down, there's another cut to the middle class. So the middle class has to, we have to wake up to what's happening and speak up and say,
speak up.
This is not good for our country.
I think you're absolutely right. So, you know, when I look at also the impact on Canadians, I think there's another angle, and I'm going to ask you about it. I think we've all heard about the very close tragic miss of a Boeing plane that had its bolt stripped off and a door flew off. I mean, it's really quite a horrific situation. And anyone knows that the typical altitude for commercial aircraft is in, you know, the mid 30,000 feet high. And this plane, Alaska Airlines, as I recall, was flying more like 15,000 or something like that. So a relatively low altitude. But if that plane would have been, you know, at normal altitude, you know, anything could have happened in terms of people literally being sucked out of that hole. It would have been horrific. Mm-hmm. And it has happened before. So the thing that struck me is that you want to hire people when they do a job based on merit. We want to lead with excellence. We don't want to emphasize your political values or, quote, diversity, equity, inclusion. We want to hire the best person. If I have a cardiac surgeon, I want someone to be the best. I don't want them to go through a DEI lens. If I have a banker, I want them to be a good banker, a great banker. Mm-hmm. When I want an accountant, I want them to be a great one. So is that where this whole ESG stuff, though, that's inserting its ugly head in this in an insidious way and saying, we're going to lead not with excellence or merit, but we're going to lead with your politics. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, the banks should be, you know, wisely and prudently managing our investments and not be co-opted by these special interest groups. And that is what's happening. It's or not even banks, pension funds, anyone who's investing our money should be prudently managing their investments. And instead of catering to the special interest groups.
I agree. A number of weeks ago, months ago, I'm trying to recall here exactly, but you wrote a number of months ago, Gina, I thought a brilliant column. It was featured in the Financial Post. It was called Stop the Weaponization of Banks. And you talked about the story of the great Nigel Farage, the politician who is one of the leaders in Brexit in the UK. Mm-hmm. Tell us about Nigel Farage and his story. It's really quite incredible.
So he was the leader of Brexit. He was the former leader of the UK Independent Party. And he was informed by his bank, a private bank called Coutts & Co., who is owned by a larger bank called NatWest, that they were closing all of his accounts. And he wasn't given any reason, but then it was later leaked that the reason was they didn't agree with his politics. So that it didn't really get a lot of press in Canada, but the point of my article about it was to say, well, this is what's happening when the banks are saying they're not investing in oil and gas, they're debanking oil and gas, the sector. And so let's not think that this is far away in the UK, it's happening right here. So in his case, it led to the resignation of the CEO of Coutts & Co. and the CEO of NatWest. And so that's where, you know, banks should stick to banking, not just following the whims or the demands of these activist groups.
Yeah, and, exactly.
You know, Canada has some of the most well-managed, well-regulated, well-capitalized banks in the world. And Canadian citizens should be able to sleep easily knowing that if they want to open up an account with a bank, they'll have no problem, because it doesn't matter what I might think or what my political bents are. It should be, I'm going in this bank, I have money, I would like to invest this money, and you will be doing a good job managing my investments.
Right on. So let's pay attention to the stories of Nigel Farage, and let's also pay attention to the stories of those people who had the audacity to give donations to what was called the Truckers Convoy, who were debanked en masse by all kinds of, on the request of our federal government, our own federal government, and some of our banks colluded with that request. So my question is this, are the banks on thin ice when it comes to pursuing these tracks of ESG that undermine not only our performance and return, but that are quite willing and able to go along in the politicization of this. Because this says to me, why would you ever deal with a bank and you wake up the next day and you've been debanked because you don't have the right political belief? This is really quite disturbing, is it not, Gina?
Yes. Well, that's our goal. InvestNow's goal is to get the banks to prevent them from giving in to the political and ideological pressure that they're facing right now, and not have them become complicent in the in these schemes. You know,
they exactly
to undermine Canada or Canadians. Yeah. So that's our job. We're trying to speak up and say, oh, this is wrong. We need to support Canada and everyday Canadians.
Right on.
Not become an arm of the government.
So part of this is I'm also going to ask, in this type of divestment movement, as the banks kind of buy into this, is it fair to say not everyone has, or has everybody pretty well bought onto this divestment?
Well,
movement?
Everyone has bought on to the net of the, I'm most concerned with the big five banks. Most of them have bought into the net zero. They've pledged net zero. They've joined alliances like the Financial Services Alliance, the Glasgow. The banks have all formed an alliance saying that they are committing to net zero in their investment portfolios and their own investment, like loans, anything is committed to, they're committed to net zero. So at the end of the day, when they're called to, well, have you met net zero? Well, it's very easy to say, well, no, that means we can't invest in oil and gas companies because that'll increase our our emissions numbers. So that's the scary part, because they're committing to this policy, which is not legally binding, and running their business that way.
Okay. So Gina, my question is, as these banks, and there's so many others, look at your credit union, look at anybody you deal banking with, look at them closely, open your eyes. And I'm telling you, as they adopt these kinds of statements and policies and they hire up on all these staff, no wonder your banking fees are so darn high. You got to ask yourself the question, are they serving you or are they serving a woke political cause? And in that case, though, if they're if they're not serving you, let alone as a shareholder, aren't they opening themselves up to class action lawsuits? Aren't they opening themselves up to grave liability? Because they are not serving you.
Well, yes, but people have to wake up to the fact that they're not serving us or serving you. Then that's not happening yet. They're, as I said, you know, most people aren't voting their shares. They're just saying, okay, do whatever you tell me to do.
Okay.
So if I'm owning a share in the banks, then they can make a difference by voting for certain proposals.
Okay, but in the United States now, we've got a lot of signs of green shoots arising, and it's very interesting because the United States and at Frontier, we've helped document this. We have all kinds of sister type of organizations that have introduced legislation across some, I think it's 27 states now, that have banned this type of activity. They've banned ESG. In fact, some of them are criminalizing this. They're saying, if you adopt this, you are betraying your customers and your clients. And not only that, as a state, we're not going to invest any of our pension funds in you. So BlackRock, you can say goodbye to that business. And they've brought down the hammer. So what's happening now is, what's ironic is ESG now, if I look at some of the Bloomberg reports, would say ESG is one of the most hated acronyms or three-letter words on Wall Street now. Are you seeing that tide turn now in Canada a little bit? Or are we behind?
Not in Canada yet, but I have been following what's happening in the States with the state financial institutions saying they're not investing in any ESG funds. And now this new law that they're hoping will take effect to say ESG is, they're criminalizing ESG investments. I don't believe that's happening in Canada yet. We're behind in that. And I think that's because people aren't aware of the power they have, because they could say, our government, provincial governments could say, we're not investing in any ESG funds or any funds that don't invest in oil and gas companies.
Okay. So this is where in Canada we've got a big job to do in terms of raising awareness. We've got a lot of action to do. And that's certainly one of the things that I'm very intrigued about now is the next stage. So you've got some proposals that you are working at. Tell us about those proposals.
Yeah. So last year, for the first time ever, a counter proposal, you know, we were there on the other side proposing to the banks that they need to commit to the Canadian oil and gas sector. And our proposals didn't win, or let's say they didn't pass, but we got some support and we're back this year with a different proposal saying, okay, if you're following this path to net zero, show us that you're not blindly following this path to net zero. We want to see a report showing us how this will, how this path will impact shareholder price, revenues, jobs, the economy. Like, how will this path to net zero affect the banks and your profits, our shareholder earnings? So that's our proposal to the banks this year. It's to say, well, if you're not going to end net zero, show us why this is such a good thing.
All right.
And we're going to be presenting at the AGMs in April. They will suggest voting against our proposal, but we want as many people voting for our proposal as possible, because we need to hold the banks, the board of directors, the management teams to account to say, well, if you're intent on pursuing this, show us what the repercussions will be.
Right on. Well, I think that's a very exciting proposal. So stay tuned on that. You'll have to come back,
yes,
Gina, and keep us informed about that. And I think on another front,
definitely,
let's be clear. A lot of this is also driven not just by a federal government and its associated allies all over the place, but it's a worldwide kind of driven thing. The Davos set is clearly behind this. In fact, last year, the theme, I mean, ironically, the theme this year for Davos, the meeting of the fancy set that meets in Davos, Switzerland, was regaining trust. Imagine that. And the prior year was focused on ESG. I don't know if you remember that. But I do remember is just the number of private jets flying in there. So I think what I always marvel at is the audacity of these people, the good and the great, coming in and looking down at the rest of the people, the unwashed masses of people, saying, you're going to have to invest this way and live this kind of life and do this and drive this kind of car. And meanwhile, we're going to keep flying our private jets into Davos and preaching this at you. I mean, it is really quite stunning, the arrogance of this. So I think what we're doing here is very important. We've got to raise the level of awareness. We've got to disinfect this with sunlight and transparency so people can see these people are not our friends. They're not serving us. And we've got to move our business elsewhere if they can't get with the program. Isn't that right, Gina? We've got to ultimately move our business.
That's right. Find the spots that will invest based on the merits of the investment and not any other reason.
Exactly.
And that's what we have to find.
Well, this
or
has
start
been...
Start a bank that does that.
Yeah, let's start a new credit union that gets it, or a new bank that gets it. But by golly, why would you give your money to be used for a political cause that is going to put you out of business, get you unemployed, lower your standard of living so your kids don't have any future, and to boot, it's going to actually make our environment worse? I mean, it's just it's just stunning, isn't it, Gina?
That's right.
So where do you see those green blades of grass on your horizon? Is there one thing that you find beyond the kind of awareness that's developing and the proposals that you're making? Are there other signs of hope that you see?
Well, I see a lot of hope in the States and also in Europe, because maybe the hardships that they're facing will cause a turnaround and not so blindly committed to, you know, deindustrialization. Maybe they'll realize, oh, there's a different way or a better way to do this. I struggle to find the hope in Canada, but I try and be hopeful that our message will get across and will turn some opinions our way.
Well, Gina, it's been a pleasure to talk with you, and I see certainly hope in our conversation, and I'm grateful for your work as an executive director at InvestNow, and be sure to check out their website, and also be sure to look at the Frontier website for lots of backgrounders on ESG, and it's been a pleasure to talk with you today, Gina.
Thank you, David. It's been a pleasure to speak to you as well.
Thank you.
Thank you for watching Leaders on the Frontier. We're a nonpartisan think tank. We explore ideas, policy, and practical solutions that can make a difference in the lives of Canadians. We do not accept any government funding. We work for you. Thank you for supporting Frontier. Visit fcpp.org to give. While you're there, be sure to check out our latest articles and research. Without open discussion and debate, you're not thinking, nor are you free. Comment below. We'd love for you to join the conversation.